Welcome to WMNF on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. Today we're going to continue our look at the most important elections this year in the Tampa Bay area. St. Petersburg is electing a new mayor and three new city council members. We've already heard from almost all of the people in the city council primaries. Today we'll hear from the mayoral candidates. The primary election is 2 weeks from today. Even if you don't live in St. Pete, you should pay attention because it's the largest city in Pinellas and the second largest in our region. You can email your comments to DJ@WMNF.org. But first up today, we're going to look at how the pandemic and the surge that's been caused by the Delta variant continues to impact independent music venues. Joining me in the studio this morning is Tom DeGeorge, owner of the Crowbar in Tampa's Ybor City. Welcome back to WMNF, Tom.
Hey, thank you, Sean.
I'm really glad you can join us this morning. You wrote an impassioned post on Facebook on Saturday. One of the main points was, now that the music industry is gearing back up, but because our state is averaging 20,000 cases a day of COVID and because bands are asking for proof of vaccination to play in rooms all over the U.S., in parentheses, you write, which our governor has made illegal, bands are skipping Florida. So you're saying that choices by Ron DeSantis are hurting Florida's businesses like yours?
Well, you know, over the past, I'd say probably 10 to 14 days, bands started coming out asking for either proof of vaccination or negative tests, because everybody knows that with the tour industry, you know, these bands are going from state to state. Margins on profit are very small for tours, and so it's important for artists to make sure that they're doing whatever it takes in those rooms to keep them and their crew from getting sick. Through the work with the National Independent Venue Association that I've done over the last year and a half, you know, talking with different states, the industry is moving in the direction in about 40 states of proof of vaccination or a negative test. The executive order that was signed into law here in the state of Florida makes that illegal for us to do. So almost immediately I had some acts cancel for the fall season. And that's a trend that looks like it could continue if we don't either get our cases under control or if there's a change in that law.
So opponents of ideas like requiring vaccinations to get into a venue, they would say that they want freedom. They don't want to be told what to do. You're opposed. So it sounds like they might think that you're opposed to freedom. What would you say to that?
I mean, I get a lot of hate mail. I'm trying to operate my business. And, you know, we've already been through a year and a half where we've had not one single touring artist in a year and a half. And there was a lot of time there where we sacrificed as business owners because we were told that our industry, you know, wasn't safe, which is understandable. This is a transmittable disease by contact. So when you have packed concerts, that's hard to stop. Now that there is a vaccine, it's a way to protect the artists, the customers, our staff. And I just believe that, you know, if there's certain artists that say, we don't want that and we're fine with just a mask requirement, that's one thing. But if other artists, if that's what they want and it goes into the contract and into the ticket sales before people purchase tickets, and it's another requirement that's in those tickets, we wouldn't be forcing anybody to do anything. Somebody would make a personal decision based on those requirements. And, you know, at this point, over the last year and a half, we haven't got any funding from the state of Florida. So I wish, you know, they let us operate our business the way we want to. And I also think it's important, you know, the tour industry is a national industry. It's very hard to get our industry going again, which contributes to all other elements of the economy, hotels, parking lots, restaurants, bars, tourism. To get a national thing going again when state to state people are trying to do different things. It's extremely difficult right now.
So it would make more sense maybe in from your perspective to have kind of a policy where everyone can get on board with it and the tour band, the bands that are touring know, the venues know what the policy is, and it's not being impacted by individual states and maybe the quirks of each state or each state's governor.
In a perfect world, yes. Mm-hmm.
So you talked about going through the pandemic and losing a lot of business. How do you survive, especially when the state didn't give you any help? You did get a little bit of late help from the federal government, isn't that right?
Yes. I mean, we lobbied from April to finally December when the Save Our Stages Act was passed and became the Shuttered Venues Operators Grant. And then I just received my funding a couple of weeks ago. And that wasn't unlike a lot of other venues, in a lot of states they did get state funding. I was able, luckily, right away, I took out loans and different things to get through this. But without that Shuttered Venues Operators Grant, I wouldn't have survived at all. And now, going into the fall and winter season, you know, that money was supposed to be to help make us whole from all the debt we had leading up to this. So going into the fall and winter season and knowing that there's options in order for me to increase my business that I'm incapable of doing, and it's going to cost me a whole nother season, maybe even more. You know, the spring is in jeopardy. It's just very difficult. When you have people say, why don't you just deal with the bands that are willing to come? You know, I want to deal with 100% of the bands, you know, and it reminds me a lot of pre-vaccine when people would say, well, why don't you just get a restaurant license? You know, I'm trying to operate my business. I'm a concert venue and I want to get back to work, and my customers want to see good bands, and the artists that play want to be safe in my venue.
Our guest is Tom DeGeorge. He's owner of the Crowbar in Tampa's Ybor City, and we're talking about restrictions that Florida is putting on his business because, for one, he can't tell people that they have to get vaccinated or tested in order to come to the venue, even if that's what the bands are demanding. You're also a part of the National Independent Venue Association that you mentioned earlier, but remind people a little bit about what that is, how it got started, and what it's supposed to do.
The National Independent Venue Association is an organization made up of independent venue owners from around the country, and it's designed as a trade organization, basically, that can help independent venues survive and thrive and do better, but it was formed out of necessity. It was an idea that ended up forming out of necessity due to the pandemic, and almost immediately we formed an advocacy committee, which I was on. That committee was led by Dana Frank, and we went and fought for the funding. Going forward, we're going to have all different kinds of programs, such as trying to get venues better insurance rates, breaks on PROs. I'm going to be heading up a committee that does an all-venues hazard safety plan for different things people can look out for that will hopefully get them breaks on their insurance and security supplies for their rooms, so we don't have incidents like Orlando Pulse or, you know, some of the things that have happened in our own community here. I had a bad incident at the Masquerade in 2005. You know, we want to do whatever we can to help our independent venues thrive. So that's NEVA.
And this is something that you've talked about on our airwaves before, but it was kind of frustrating for you, as you've expressed, when you saw that other venues were not taking safety precautions as much as yours. So they were able to, they made the choice to, even if it wasn't safe, to operate almost at full capacity, when you made the decision to have smaller events and distancing and have your customers be more safe. How has that played out through the pandemic?
You know, I just think here in the state of Florida, we handled things a lot differently than other states. And just because I had already been doing that work with the National Venue Association for so long, I had an immediate reference point of what people were dealing with in other states. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't think the average person would know what's really going on in all 50 states. So I had that reference point. And to me, being a part of the industry, it just didn't feel right to do anything that was going to impact people's health and that other people around the country in our industry could not do. Other venues, you know, it's still difficult as I'm watching my industry really muddle through this and try to gear back up. And then you have nightclubs that, you know, are packed on the weekends or huge Stanley Cup celebrations or the Super Bowl, you know, and we still can't even get our industry off the ground. We're like the last of the Mohicans. And there seems to be, you know, I feel like we should be coming out of this because there is a vaccine. And because we can't utilize it for our customers, it's like another obstacle to get back to some sort of normalcy.
I want to remind people that we're listening to Tom DeGeorge, owner of Crowbar in Tampa's Ybor City. This is WMNF Tampa. It's 10:16 in the morning. My name is Sean Canaan, and we're going to wrap this up pretty soon. But I want to ask you, one of the most famous or most notable incidences of when an artist has said, look, their venue has to require either immunizations or a check, something like that. It happened recently with Jason Isbell, and there were places in Texas he just had to cancel his gig because the rules in Texas, similar to Florida, meant that the venue wasn't able to comply. So you said that there might be more artists like Jason Isbell that will just not even come to Florida because of this. So can you elaborate?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the direction that things are trending in. Like I said, I think there's about 40 states right now that can do proof of vaccine. Industry-wide, it's the way things are gearing. And here locally, I think people are going to be forced, possibly with a decision of either defy the order or lose artists. The problem is I don't even think it's as simple as just defying the order, because a lot of bands don't want to become a poster child or get stuck in a situation where they're coming to an area where it feels hostile. So what we really need is for the governor to amend that and make an exception for our industry, being that it's a national touring industry that people are going all around the country.
You know? And you've made a campaign plea. You've asked people to actually contact the governor. And what would you like them to say?
Just that live music is important to them and it helps the economy. And, you know, we've been really absent of a good deal of it over the last year and a half. And I think that, you know, if you look at anything, that's the one thing. When you go to a show, everybody's on the same side. You know, when you go to a concert and you listen to music, everybody's there for that artist and everybody's connected in that moment. And it's something we haven't had in a really long time at its full capacity. And we need it. You know, we need it back, and other industries need it back, because, like I said, it supports all of other levels of the economy. And I did reach out myself to the governor's office early last week before I started the email campaign, and I haven't heard back from him yet. But I'm basically going with the same strategy I went with for the Save Our Stages. You know, I want voters to contact the governor's office and let him know, hey, this is extremely important to our state that we get this back so we can have a healthy economy and get people happy.
You've had to cancel shows. There was the Pogo and 5-8 show that had to be canceled because the band said, look, we just can't play Florida, or at least one of the bands. We don't know the specifics. Are there going to be shows that are scheduled now that are canceled? For example, there's a very huge gathering at the beginning of October, Gasparilla Music Festival. Is it possible that could get stopped?
I mean, you're probably going to have to talk to Phil Benito and the organizers over there. I have talked to them. I know that they're weighing different options, but I think everything is a possible threat right now. You know, if we're in a state that we can't utilize 100% of the things that are out there to keep people safe, and you're dealing with artists, like I said, that have to travel all over the country, I think we're in big trouble. I mean, we lost the Off With Their Head show. I had Skip Marley scheduled in October. I didn't even get a chance to announce that because it canceled before, and I already have several fall and winter dates that they have now held spring dates because they're concerned that if we can't get these cases down, that, you know, they don't want to come. And I had been telling people a year ago, like, hey, listen, when there's a vaccine or there's no vaccine, if we can't get these numbers under control in our state and really take this seriously, we're not going to get these bands back. And, you know, like I said, there's people that will say, hey, well, I've seen plenty of shows. There's going to be some bands that will come, but there's going to be, you know, probably 60% of them that will not under these conditions. And in order to get back, we need to be able to use all of our resources.
Well, Tom DeGeorge, before I let you go, is there anything else that you want people to know about independent music venues or about the Crowbar or about the National Independent Venue Association?
I mean, I just, all our venues here in the state of Florida, you know, not just Crowbar, all of our venues here in the state of Florida, the Orpheum, the Ritz, Wills, big and small, you know, we've all suffered a great deal, like most Americans, over this last year and a half, and we're just trying to get back to business, and we're trying to do it in a way that is safe as possible for our customers, so the consumer confidence builds, as well as the artists, because, like I said, they have to get from state to state, and asking them to go into indoor packed rooms, especially, you know, like I said, small venues like mine, You know, it's not right. So we need to make it right, and that's the only way we're going to get our industry back completely as soon as possible.
Well, thanks so much for coming on WMNF, Tom.
Thank you, Sean.
Tom DeGeorge is owner of the Crowbar in Tampa's Ybor City. We'll be right back after this short music break to hear a forum with the candidates for mayor in the St. Petersburg primary election that's coming up next Tuesday. Please stay with us. That's the Ocean Blue with Between Something and Nothing. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. I'm Sean Canaan. You might also be listening on WMNF.org, or you might be listening on the WMNF smartphone app. And perhaps you may have told your smart speaker to play WMNF, because those are some of the ways that you can listen to this show and all the other great news and public affairs and music shows on WMNF. Well, before we get to the candidate forum, I want to read some of the emails that came in that I didn't get a chance to read while Tom DeGeorge was here. I think a lot of you are very passionate about this topic, as am I. Jeff writes, I have heard that Governor DeSantis sells a t-shirt that says, "Don't Fauci my Florida." I don't understand what that means. Is Fauci a verb? Jeff is asking that. I think he also sells beer koozies with that confusing slogan as well. All right, thanks, Jeff. Also, this text came in from 813 area code. It says, thank you, Tom, for everything you've done to save our stages. And that's signed by Will. So thank you for that email. Hey, and I also should say, before I read these last couple of texts, this was streamed. That interview was filmed live on Facebook Live at WMNF News. So you can always go to WMNF News on Facebook. So facebook.com/WMNF News, or just type in WMNF News in the Facebook search box. Let me read these last couple of emails and we'll get on to our final topic of the day, of the hour, that is. Thank you, Tom, for everything. Okay, that's from Will. And this last one says, Lou in Ybor City says, thanks, Tom, you rock Ybor. So a lot of support there for our first guest, Tom DeGeorge from the Crowbar in Tampa's Ybor City. Well, next up, we're going to hear part of a recent mayoral candidate forum that's hosted by the League of Women Voters of the St. Petersburg area and the Institute for Strategic Policy Solutions at St. Petersburg College. Like some of the others that we've played in the past, this was moderated again by former Bay News 9 anchor Al Rochelle. He asked questions of these eight candidates for mayor of St. Pete: Robert Blackman, Pete Boland, Michael Ingram, Tori Nelson, Wenge Newton, Marcelle Powers, Darden Rice, and Ken Welch. If no candidate gets a majority in the August 24th primary, meaning 50% plus one, the top two will face off in November's general election. VotePinellas.com has more information about the general election in November and also next Tuesday's primary election. So let's listen to Al Rochelle asking the first question of all eight candidates.
Candidate Blackman, we'll start with you. What makes you the best qualified for the office you are now seeking?
Well, thank you very much. Robert Blackman, born and raised in St. Pete. I'm currently the city council member for District 1. Just a little bit of place setting. You know, you're going to hear a lot of discussion tonight. We've had a number of these forums with my opponents saying that they're the progressive choice, they have executive experience, or they're an intentional leader. I think these are all positive attributes, and I think that they all describe me. I have executive experience running a business, and I've renovated hundreds of affordable homes in our community. I've been progressive on council. I've fought for affordable housing and scientific education. And I don't really know how you can be an unintentional leader, but I've certainly been intentional with my actions. I think we need to put partisan politics aside and check our egos at the door and try and work as and bring St. Pete together. My campaign platform has been St. Pete for all, and you know, we just need to make sure we make the right decisions. You know, stuff as simple as, you know, one of my opponents not wanting to shake my hand before a debate the other day. That's not leadership, and it certainly is intentional, and I want to make sure we bring everybody together to solve issues. A campaign of ideas, not of personalities, and I'll bring that to the table. Thank you.
All right, candidate Boland, you have 1 minute.
Hello, my name is Pete Boland. I'm an entrepreneur and self-made businessman here in downtown St. Pete. I have an organization of 60-plus people through my restaurants in downtown St. Pete. We fought through many adversity over the years, and one of the things I'm most proud of in my business is that I did not lay off a single employee during the COVID lockdowns of 2020. We've been through a lot here in recent years, in my industry in particular, and it's really put us at the forefront of a lot of issues that face the city, whether it be mass ordinances or late night permits, cafe permits. Now we're definitely directly affected by red tide here as a part of the tourist and hospitality industry. So I have executive experience leading people. I've been a manager for a long, long time, dating back to 2009 as a general manager, and I just love this place so much. I want to give back in the best way I know how, and from all the times and all the years of meeting these elected officials, they used to call me up and ask me what to do, and now I'm here to help in a bigger and stronger fashion, and I want to be your next mayor because I want to bring common sense back to the table and put politics behind us.
All right. Candidate Ingram, you also have a minute.
Hi, my name is Michael Ingram, and as you can probably tell, I'm the youngest candidate in this field, which means that I'm going to be the candidate who can be held responsible for the longest time. Anything I would implement can be held responsible for 50, 60, 70 years from now because I was born and raised here, and I'm going to stay here. You'll be able to see me on Beach Drive or Central Avenue 60 years from now and talk to me and say, hey, why did you do this? Or thank you for doing this. I'm going to be here, and I'm going to be taking the issues that we need to face now. We're not going to have an issue of me viewing things as an issue that will be a problem for the next generation, like we saw with our sewage issue, where we dumped millions of gallons of sewage into the sea just because previous mayors thought, this won't be a problem for me, this won't be a problem for me, I won't see this. So I'm going to be someone who can be held responsible, not just for right now and taking care of the here and now issues, but for the issues that are going to face us for generations to come.
Thank you. Candidate Nelson, same question.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Tori Nelson, and I've been a servant for the community in the dark when no one has been looking for the past 20 years. I've coached Little League football. My first property I ever owned, I dedicated to the community for a homeless shelter. I have the blueprint to end homelessness in St. Pete. I ran a homeless shelter with $1,500 overhead, and I took 10 to 12 peoples off the street a month. I continued my career after my shelter got shut down by the city. I continued my career in document processing and during the COVID crisis, I was there in the trenches, and I literally certainly funded over $400,000 to the community during the crisis. I have fresh, new, innovative ideas. I have an idea to end our sewage problem. I've been reaching out to all the community leaders. I want to bring all the community leaders together at least once or twice a month, and let's come up with a solid plan and see our vision.
Thank you. Candidate Newton, you have 1 minute.
Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. I am State Representative Newton, born and raised in Midtown South St. Pete, the most impoverished area in all of Pinellas County. And it's been that way for the last 20 years or five county commission terms or two decades. 18 years in corporate America with Xerox Corporation. I'm the longest tenured local government of service in this race with 8 years on city council. I served under three mayors, Baker, Foster, and Christman. Also, 4 years in the state legislature where I built relationships and bridges to bring home much needed resources. I don't see race, I don't see creed, I don't see sexual identity, I don't see party. All I see is results. And I want to be your next mayor to make sure we can move this city forward and get rid of the seams so everybody can join in the fruits of the beautiful city that we live in. I'm Representative Wingate Newton, and I ask for your vote.
Candidate Powers, same question. You have a minute.
Hi, I'm Marcelle Powers. I am a sixth-generation Floridian. I'm a mother of two small boys that were born and being raised here. And I also own a small organic produce delivery service called Kenwood Organic Produce. We moved to contactless delivery during the pandemic and helped keep everyone safe during the pandemic. What's really important to me is tackling climate change and making sure that we build up our city so that we don't face rising seawalls, and so people are fed and that we have more equity in the city and everyone's needs are met. What's important to me are mental health therapy, communication with each other, and then also public health.
Candidate Rice, you have a minute.
Good evening. I'm St. Pete City Council Member Darden Rice. It's great to be here. Thank you to the Institute for Strategic Policy and, of course, the League of Women Voters, where I was president of the League for several years before getting elected to City Council, and really love the work that you continue to do. Respectfully, no one here has the same experience and track record that I do at City Hall getting things done, where I have a record of accomplishing bold goals, bold accomplishments, tough decisions. I have made tough decisions and accomplished creating our wage theft prevention program. We've made huge strides on the environment. I got $15 million secured in affordable housing funds, and I was the champion for health in all policies. I've been at the center of working for people in progress. I love this work. I'm ready for the job, and I'm ready to serve you. I love this city. Thank you.
And candidate Welch, you have 1 minute.
Thank you. I'm Ken Welch. It's great to see everyone tonight. It's good to be in South St. Pete, where I grew up. I'm a third-generation St. Pete resident. You know, I'm not only running for this generation, but for my daughter's generation and for my mom's generation, who's here as well. I want to make sure that we have true progress for every part of our community. The question was, why am I the most qualified? It's because I bring more experience in small business, 40 years of experience in small businesses in my family, from Welch's Woodyard to Welch's Accounting and Tax Service on 16th Street. 40 years there, 20 years right here at St. Pete College, where I brought this beautiful business process flowchart that I made as a business process analyst here, making our processes better at the college. 20 years at Florida Power and Raymond James, where I worked in lead technology, and 20 years as a county commissioner. No one brings that combination of experience in the private sector and in the public sector to this job, and I've led on issues that have made an impact in our county.
Well, that was Ken Welch, who is running for mayor in the city of St. Petersburg. The primary election is next Tuesday. Before him, we heard Darden Rice, Marcelle Powers, Wengay Newton, Tori Nelson, Michael Ingram, Pete Boland, Robert Blackman. They are all running for mayor. The top two candidates will face off in the general election in November, unless one of those candidates gets more than 50% of the vote next Tuesday. And you're listening to WMNF Tampa. It's 10:34 in the morning. We're going to hear a little bit more from this mayoral primary. If you have any questions or if you would like to make any comments or tell us who you support, email us at dj@wmnf.org. Well, here is Al Rochelle asking the next question of these eight candidates for mayor in the city of St. Petersburg on WMNF Tampa.
Now to baseball. We know the future of the Rays is still uncertain beyond 2027. In the meantime, the city sent out invitations, RFPs as they're called, for developers to reimagine the 80-acre Tropicana site. Two-part question. Have you read the RFP document? And will you continue to pursue the 21 goals in that original plan or simply start over? Candidate Rice, you're first for the minute.
I've certainly read the RFP and helped write it, and that's the reason why considerations of environment and health and all policies and wage theft prevention are included in the RFP. I led the effort on council to pass a resolution to ask the mayor to put a stop to the process, a pause, while we figure out what's happening with the Rays, because it was bizarre to me that we would continue this process without knowing what the Rays were up to. We're married to the Rays for the next 7 years, and the Rays have an ability to block or stop whatever final decision we make. So it really made sense to hit the pause button and to get the mayor talking to the Rays again. I would certainly, I think we put a lot of good work into how we put together the RFP. I would not necessarily want to restart that, but I would be very interested in opening things back up again to seeing if we could get some new developers to apply after we have a better idea of what the heck is going on with the baseball team.
Candidate Welch, same question.
Yes, I've read it. I think the Chrysler administration did a great job in putting together the RFP. The 21 principles are sound. They hit on equity, housing, jobs, the need for meeting space, transportation. But look, you know, this is personal to me. My grandfather's woodyard was at the gas plant. Our church was at the gas plant. It's more than about baseball. It's about fulfilling those promises that were made 35 years ago of economic development, jobs, and equity going forward. To me, that's the priority. Baseball is secondary. And I made that clear to the Rays. I do think we can come to an agreement. I think the split season idea has merit. I've talked to the Tourist Development Council members about that. The one thing we do great in Pinellas County is spring training, and this would be an expansion of that. But look, it's about those promises that were made, the 800 people that were displaced, and now we have an opportunity that's going to impact us for generations to come to get this right. Baseball can be a part of it. It is not my highest priority.
Candidate Blackman, same question.
Thank you very much. So yes, I've read the RFP document as one of two sitting members of City Council. I've been intimately involved with this process. And of course, I've pursued the goals. They're very good. We want to make sure we have a community benefit and what benefits our entire city from the redevelopment. It's a once-in-a-generational opportunity. That being said, would I restart the process? The timing was flawed of when we put the RFP out. The goals were fine, but we shouldn't have put it out in the middle of a pandemic. We rushed it because, unfortunately for Mayor Kreisman, it was towards the end of his term. We were very much stifled in who we would have gotten our participants. So what would I do with the process? Of course, I'd like to see a consolidation of the Rowdies and the Rays into one site on the Tropicana Field site currently. Then we can redevelop Al Lang Field into park space or possibly additional museums. Also, we have land on the east end of that site which we can add in, so we could turn an 86-acre redevelopment into potentially as much as a 100-acre redevelopment. But I'm best suited to deal with this because I deal with the Rays executive organization now, I've dealt with this issue on council, and I have business real-world experience. Thank you.
All right, candidate Boland.
Al, can you repeat the second part of the question? I want
to make second part, specific. First part, have you read the RFP, and would you continue to pursue the 21 goals in that document or simply start over?
So, yes, I have read the RFP. It's been some time, I'll admit, so I do need to revisit it. But I was part of some community discussions that were helped to identify those goals as a very interested party and a former season ticket holder for the Rays and a lifelong St. Pete resident. But I would like to honor some of those principles and goals there, but I think that we are getting kind of the carriage in front of the horses a little bit. We do need to figure out what the Rays are. They are our partners for at least another 5 years, so we need to find out what the move is for if we're going to have a permanent stadium either at the Tropicana Field site, or I'd like to introduce the Al Lang site into it. That's where baseball's been for a very long time, about 100 years. We've been on the waterfront, and we don't have any complicated issues like, you know, the destruction by eminent domain of the gas plant district. But I'd like to look at carving up the parcels a little bit. That 86 acres has a lot of opportunity here, but we need to do things like make sure Booker Creek gets properly restored to its natural beauty and really have some specialized development. Having one developer take on this huge project with or without baseball doesn't seem like a lot of good sense to me, but there are a lot of good principles in that proposal, so we don't have to truly start over.
All right. Candidate Ingram, same question. RFP and the 21 goals. Would you pursue them or start over?
Yes, I've read the document as well. I believe that while the 21 points are very well set and are very important, we need to be making sure that we're not just looking at a short list of priorities. We need to be focusing on a few major priorities, namely, we need to be looking at affordable housing and our local businesses. While we do need to attract outside money into St. Pete, we need to be making sure that we're focusing on St. Pete first. We need to be growing as a city from the bottom up, from our local businesses up, and from our lowest denominator up. We need to be making sure that we're not just trying to attract the biggest outside source of income, be it the Rays or be it a major hotel chain that comes in. While our economy is driven by our tourism, we need to be making sure that this once-in-a-generation opportunity is something that we're using properly and something that we're using for the future of St. Pete, not just put money into the pockets of investors.
Candidate Nelson.
No, I haven't read the RFP, but I would like to scrap it and use it as a reference. Like I said, I've been reaching out to all the community leaders, getting the grasp of what we need, and I'm talking about literally. I met with the chief today. I have a meeting with the Rays on the 22nd, and I heard through a friend of a friend of our previous mayor, Bill Foster, that he offered the Rays a substantial amount of property, and the owner just didn't want it for free, free land. So we got to find out what their real intentions are. My idea is we free up the land, and we move the Rays to the Allen Field Stadium location. We do a complete reconstruction of a waterfront stadium. It'll be a world-renowned hub. We'll have the best stadium in the world. If we can secure the funds and not be a burden on the citizens, I think that could be a catalyst for some economic development right there. And we can also free up the Trop location, so we'll have two catalysts for economic development. So we really have to see exactly what the Rays' intentions are, because if the previous mayor offered them free land, I don't know exactly what can we offer them.
Candidate Newton.
Thank you. Yes, I served under three mayors and dealt with this baseball with those three mayors and watched how they did it. To the question, yes, I read the RFP, the 21 goals that are in there, and I wouldn't totally start over, but it's too much doubling the detail. They had an RFP when they did the Trop site, when they took the land from the individuals that owned it that looked like me with eminent domain and the promise of progress. So the devil's always in the detail. What I would like to see happen is that in 2007, when I won and got on council, the Rays was proposing moving all baseball operations to 15 acres. I'd like to move that to 15 acres on that Trop site next to MLK. And if they want to do a split season, I can support that as long as it's got St. Pete in it. The St. Pete money is going to be spent, should be St. Pete, Montreal. Also, that was our Black Wall Street. So I want black businesses there, not in tents, but in hard infrastructure. And thirdly, lastly, we got an opportunity to address some of our rent control, if you call it, on property that we own. We're not having to fear NIMBY and the other things that go along with property rights.
And candidate Powers.
No, I have not read the document. I read a lot of outcry from citizens that they didn't like it, and I do want to open the Tropicana site up to a public vote before coming up with anything else. However, I have been taking a climate change class from the Clio Institute, and we did a climate box thing. Some of the results look like we have baseball in the middle of July. So we're going to be dealing with 105 degree temperatures in the middle of July while people are outside trying to watch baseball. And it's changed my whole mind about the idea of having an outdoor stadium. It's just not going to be practical on any realistic level in the future.
That was Marcelle Powers. We also heard Darden Rice, Ken Welch, Wengay Newton, Tori Nelson, Michael Ingram, Pete Boland, Robert Blackman. They're all running for mayor of St. Petersburg. The primary election is next Tuesday. You can email us with who you'd like to vote for, dj@wmnf.org. We're tight on time, so I'm going to go quickly to the very next question. This one's about red tide.
Mayor Kreisman asked Governor DeSantis for help dealing with the effects of red tide. And the question is going to be, is there anything you think the city can do about red tide other than just clean it up? Candidate Newton, you go first on this one.
Yes. In the legislature, the last budget that we passed, we got over $207 million for the governor to be able to combat algae blooms and the release of nitrates and whatnot from the waterways down in Lake Okeechobee. And that was very helpful. But what has happened now with Piney Point dumping all those nitrates in the water, saying it ain't affecting anything, you see what's happening. These fish were already out there in the Gulf, and what happened with the storm came in, it brought them all into the intercoastal waterway. We have got to do all we can to make sure that we keep using those funds. We funded the Mosaic Science Institute with funds to be able to find things to help combat algae blooms, but we have got to also put more money into educating people about the use of phosphorus and fertilizers, because that stuff gets into the drains, into the waterways, and creates blooms too. We got to do all we can to educate people and also implement smart policies to make sure we don't have these blow-ups every summer.
All right, candidate Powers, same question.
The people destroying the environment have names and addresses. They just dumped 90,000 gallons of sulfur from Apollo Beach. just like when Lawton Childs was governor and he went after big tobacco, so now we have Florida Healthy Kids, an insurance program for children. We need to go after these companies that are dumping into our waterways, and we need to build a Green New Deal from the settlement funds. Just because we stopped collecting data on BP doesn't mean they stopped spilling oil. We have Piney Point, Mosaic was involved, the new company that took over wasn't fully involved. We need to follow it back from the very first people who started these things, even if we have to use the city as an example and go after people who were involved with us putting stuff into the sewer. There are a number of things that people have done that are wrong and illegal to our environment, and we need to hold them accountable, and we need to take them to court.
Candidate Rice.
I stood next to Mayor Christman this morning at that press conference, and yes, I think we should ask Governor DeSantis to declare an emergency. Short term, yes, we need more help. We need more manpower. We need equipment. We have a lot of dead fish that we need to get out of the bay. Long term, I would ask Governor DeSantis to direct DEP, the Department of Environmental Protection, to protect, to enforce the laws that are on the books. These gypsum stacks, and clearly the pollution from that spill exacerbated the red tide. It is so important. These gypsum stacks are unfathomably large. They're several hundred square acres, 100 feet tall. They'll last forever. The companies that step in to make money managing them don't last forever. They blow through their permits, and we can't allow DEP to just continue to look the other way while we have such a foreseeable problem that poses an existential threat to our way of life.
Candidate Welch.
Thank you. This is a big topic. I think the first thing we can do is advocate. The state needs to be helpful. More than a decade ago, I debated the incoming Speaker of the House and the Senate President when they wanted to open up our Florida shores for oil drilling. We need to continue that advocacy. But then we need to do what we need to do here at home. There is an integrated water resources master plan that the city has. It's $2.4 billion to fix our pipes and our plants so that we aren't contributing with more sewage overflows as we've had here in the last 5 or 6 years. That's going to cost us all money. I want you to know everybody's water bill is going up the next 4 or 5 years. We're all going to pay for that, but we haven't paid for it for decades past, and now we need to catch up. And then we need to have good local laws like the fertilizer ordinance that I helped support as a county commissioner to stop our contribution of nitrogen to our waterways, which helps lead to red tide and other bad effects. So it's a multi-layered approach, and we need to be present on all forms.
All right, candidate Blackman.
Thank you very much. We need to, again, lead with the science. On council, I've been a big proponent of investing in preventative maintenance as opposed to reactive. I certainly am thankful for all of our city employees for the cleanup they've done recently, but I've advocated on council for a lakes management program because we've had a lot of these issues with our lakes throughout the city. We have 80 lakes. We've had algae blooms in them. I'd like to expand that out to have all bodies of water covered under this program because it's always cheaper to do proactive measures than reactive, and it's much less devastating environmentally. Other than that, we need to continue to look at natural resiliency measures like seagrass mitigation beds, which will help our environment. Also mangroves. The oyster plan I'm talking about is very, very simple, very, very cheap, and very, very effective. And other than that, we need to continue to invest in infrastructure. We've done a good job. We need to continue to dedicate resources. On council, I've advocated for going to a more cash-heavy program so that we can get more work done in a shorter amount of time. But infrastructure investments are always going to be essential as well.
Candidate Boland.
Well, I think I've already said some of the things the city could do in some earlier answers to questions tonight, but I want to kind of channel my Howard Beale here a little bit and say I don't have to tell you things are bad. Things are actually worse than bad. So 1 million pounds of marine life has been recovered from Tampa Bay and inlet waters. 1 million pounds of dead marine life. We have a serious problem. We have a threat of having a dead zone here. We need to start with education and awareness to how bad this problem is and how important it is that we can address this. We need to lobby aggressively and desperately for federal and state help so that our children can fish Tampa Bay, all right, in the future. We need to get a community movement together for everybody to say never again. We need to know what causes and exacerbates these things like the red tide, this aggressive red tide bloom. We need to take another look at this $45 million from the American Rescue Act to help put it to people that are being victimized victimized by this red tide bloom. We need to address natural cures, and we need to hold people accountable, like the state of Florida, that totally dropped the ball and let Piney Point's disaster happen. So we've got a lot of things we can do as a city, but it starts by getting a community together and say, we're not going to let this happen anymore.
All right. Candidate Ingram, same question.
We need to make sure that we're not trying to just control red tide. We need to be making sure that we're taking it away at the source. Things like the level of nitrogen in our reclaimed water, things like the sewage spills that we have had over the years, things like Piney Point, these are all leading to these red tide blooms. This is the worst red tide bloom that I can personally remember. And this can be the last red tide bloom that we see. If we start taking this seriously, if we start taking this seriously now, we put the investment in now, we make sure that this, all the causal factors, we put in a good analysis of it. We figure out, how do we stop this? How do we stop this, not just, how do we stop this for cheap? We need to be making sure that this is something we're properly investing in, because this isn't just affecting our quality of life. This is affecting our local businesses. This is affecting the people who live here, because we're a tourist economy. And if every year we start seeing red tide blooms that are driving people out, St. Pete will not continue to be able to thrive the way it has.
And candidate Nelson.
Guys, this is an unprecedented time in our life. You know, we're moving into the future, and we have to seriously consider what are we doing. Because right now, the red tide runoff, it usually, from my understanding, it goes south, but now it's going east and west, okay? So we got a lot of infrastructure here. We got the halt on the infrastructure, okay? We have to tighten up our infrastructure. I had a meeting, like I said, I'm literally reaching out to every leader. Ken Wise, the chief operations manager at the Water Waste Management, he said I was the only person that called him. We figured out a solution in about a 30-minute phone call. We need to tighten up our government operations. We need more codes. We need a finance program for homeowners to tighten up their lateral lines. Lateral lines is the private lines on your property. A lot of private homeowners can't afford to tighten those lines up. Okay, but we can finance that, and that'll help with the runoff. Okay, natural fertilizers. There are a lot of natural fertilizers on the market right now. We need to make that a mandate. Natural fertilizer, that contributes to it. Like I said, until we figure out this, definitely let's put a halt to all this construction. Let's not take away from our integrity.
You're listening to a forum of St. Pete mayoral candidates, and we've heard Tori Nelson, Michael Ingram, Pete Boland, Robert Blackman, Marcelle Powers, Darden Rice, and Ken Welch. We have one more question to go before the top of the hour. This one's about climate change, which is a good preview for tomorrow's Midpoint show at 10 o'clock. Janet and Shelley will be talking about the latest UN governmental climate change report. So please tune in tomorrow at 10 for that. But here are the eight candidates for St. Pete Mayor. The primary is next Tuesday.
Do you feel something needs to be done about the effect of climate change on St. Petersburg? Now, we asked this last night, and I'm going to ask you to get very specific, because everybody says, yeah, we got to do something about it. I want to know one or two things that you think the city could do that would have an effect on climate change and not just be a feel-good Band-Aid. And we'll start out with candidate Powers.
I inherited a patent to scrub carbon out of the air using the sewer system. As we update our sewer system, we could implement it and it wouldn't be that cost effective. Instituting a hyperloop monorail with it, which works on air pressure, would help move the carbon and the methane gas from the sewer and other greenhouse gases quicker through the environment. This would give us an opportunity of becoming a carbon negative city. In addition to that, I want to put in green buildings like they have in Singapore. I don't want to see any more concrete buildings and the mitigation of putting maybe a foot or two underground to collect water isn't enough. When a tropical storm hits Houston, cars go washing down the road. We're going to be like Houston if we continue on the path we're on.
All right, great. Candidate Rice, same question.
Well, I worked on climate change for the National Sierra Club for a number of years before even getting elected. This is an issue that's really hits close to home for me. On council, I created the first ever environmental committee that really took up the charge working on how we can adopt policies to green our buildings and our fleets to reduce our pollution output, but also save money because we're cutting pollution, but we're using less energy. I think Christman has turned
turned us in the right direction in a lot of ways. I would have liked that we would have made a little bit more progress or worked more. As a progressive mayor, I will continue our commitment to these solutions. And also, I think we talk a lot about adaptation in city planning circles. We've got to talk more about mitigation, and mitigation is actual pollution reduction. I was very proud to also, with my work on my environmental committee, that helped us get the Bloomberg Grant Award, and the city got $2 million in value for tackling this very important issue.
Candidate Welch, same question.
Thank you. I think it's important that we actually follow the science and act on what we already know. The city has an integrated sustainability action plan. They need to move forward with that. They need to fund, for example, an energy assessment on all city buildings. That has not been done. It's been recommended for some time. We need to move forward with that. I met with Sharon Wright and had a deep discussion. That's one of the things that we talked about. We need to move forward with fleet conversion. One of the things I did as a county commissioner was put a budget item in the county budget for $600,000 to fund the first charging station for the first electric bus in Pinellas County. We need to move forward with that. Then we do need to move forward with adaptation. We need to make a decision on what we're going to do in the coastal high hazard area. 40% of the city now is in the coastal high hazard area, which means it will flood in a Cat 1 hurricane. We need to determine where we're going to build, where we won't build, and where we'll build with additional infrastructure. And finally, we're going to need to use our CRA funds to help folks who are in the middle of the city, where the affordable housing is, upgrade their homes to be sustainable. Thank you.
All right, Candidate Blackman, same question.
Thank you very much. Climate change is kind of a big tent topic. First of all, we'll talk about what's going on currently with the red tide. You know, we can debate all day long what causes it, but we need to clean up our waters and mitigate damage that's been done. That's why, you know, a plan as simple as introducing vertical oyster gardens for an opt-in system for any of those who are willing to take it underneath their docks for waterfront homes. For all of these finger canals, a healthy oyster can filter 50 gallons of water per day. If we had an opt-in like we do with our rain barrel system in the city of St. Petersburg, we can make a huge impact in a short amount of time. Natural shorelines that I've been a huge proponent of. I've been involved in a number of mangrove planting projects, but we need to try and return to nature. As far as leading with science, I've fought to restore and put back online the Science Center in West St. Pete. It's a 30,000 square foot learning facility that for 60 years taught science to our youth. We're about to hopefully begin the process of renovating that facility for reopening. And lastly, I'd like to introduce a lot of the resiliency plans that we already have, as long as they pay back in a timely fashion. There's a lot of low-hanging fruit we can still do at city and municipal buildings. Thank you.
Thank you for your answer. Candidate Boland, you have a minute.
I think to restrict this to two answers for such a giant and existential threat to our society, I think is not practical. But so there is a lot of things that we could do. I think you start basically by carrying on some of the tradition of former Mayor David Fisher by planting as many trees as we can in our city, having just a very healthy canopy to help combat the CO2 gas that's creating the greenhouse effect. And then also continue on with some of the work with planting mangroves that really protect and fortify us against things like global sea level rise with that. We also going to look at some things that are contributing factors to red tide, like fertilizer runoff. So we got to make sure we have high standards for what kind of runoff we're having. And then we need to fortify the coastal high hazard area. As a resident of Shore Acres, we were very concerned about being flooded again last year. I was just flooded in November. Our home was flooded through a very weak tropical storm. So we need to make sure that we're putting resources from the federal government, the state, to help fortify those homes in the coastal high hazard area. We have to have incredibly high efficiency standards for any new development, any new buildings within our city by having a 21st century, modern, really well-equipped building department that really puts these standards into place.
Well, that was Pete Bolin. We also heard from Robert Blackman, Michael Ingram, Tori Nelson, Wenge Newton, Marcelle Powers, Darden Rice, and Ken Welch. They're all running for mayor of St. Petersburg. The primary election is next Tuesday, August 24th. You can get more information at votepinellas.com. Assuming that none of those eight candidates gets 50% plus one of the vote next Tuesday, the top two will face off in November's general election. Well, thanks to people who wrote in during the show to tell us your thoughts. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg. I also want to thank my first guest, Tom DeGeorge, who is owner of the Crowbar in Ybor City. We talked about how the state of Florida is hurting his business and keeping touring bands away from Florida. Thanks to the League of Women Voters of the St. Petersburg area and the Institute for Strategic Policy Solutions at St. Petersburg College for those for the sound from that mayoral primary. Also, I want to thank Barbara Fling for answering phones today. I'm Sean Canaan today. Stay tuned for Janelle Irwin coming up in 5 minutes in her new time, 11 o'clock on Tuesday mornings. Today, she will talk with Parkland parents about protecting students from gun violence as they go back to school. That's coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa. St. Petersburg, Lakeland, Sarasota, Newport Richey, Bradenton, and beyond. Thanks so much for listening to 88.5 FM.